Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You ready to make to come to the microphone so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I'm delighted to feature two internationally recognized guests for their expertise in false flags and terror attack. Nick Kullerstrom from the UK, who is the author of Terror on the Tube, now in its third edition, the world's leading expert on the London 7/7 bombings, who's also contributed to our understanding of many other false flag attacks. And Ole Demigard, one of the premier students of assassins and assassinations in the world, who study coup d'etat in slow motion about the death of the Swedish PM. Olof Palme is a classic. Welcome to you both. Nick, Ole, I'm so glad to have you here.
Right. Well, it's a thrill to be here with Ole, Jim. This is a first, really.
Yeah, well, I'm just delighted. wonderful. We're going to be doing 2 hours on the Brussels bombing, and you're going to learn things you never suspected, I have no doubt. Chance, do we have the first slide up? One of the fascinating aspects of Brussels is the claim that two Belgian-born brothers with violent criminal past and suspected links to plotters of the Paris attacks were alleged to have been involved in Brussels. Here you see a crowd out mourning for the attacks, where we are going to raise certain questions about what actually happened in Brussels. Ole, what first drew your attention to Brussels as a possible false flag?
I was kind of expecting a false flag to come up because, as you so well know, a drill is always the thing that comes first in these operations. They always have a drill somewhere nearby or somewhere close time-wise. And just a week or so before this happened, the biggest drill in Europe took place in the UK, where they had rebuilt an old power plant and turned it into almost like a film studio, where they had the whole scenario with a crash train and with 1,000 extras, with wounded, all of these things. 4 different countries took part of it, and there was, I think, 72 different agencies doing it as well. And right after that, they were in media. They came out and said, oh, my God, we have multiple threats here in the UK and so on. So I thought, okay, here we go again. Same story again and again. So I was expecting this to happen in the UK, but then, boom, it happened in Brussels instead.
Is it possible they could have used some footage or photographs from the UK for the Brussels presentation?
Totally possible. I would say totally, totally possible, especially the one from the metro. The only photo we see from the metro and so on, that I would say there's a very big chance that it came from there.
Very good. I would
also very much like to find out what four countries took part in this big drill. And I would suggest it could very well be the UK, France, Turkey, and Belgium, these countries that have been hit the latest here.
Nick, what first drew your attention to Brussels as a false flag?
Well, as Ole was saying, there's this extraordinary and totally unprecedented massive reconstruction of a sort of imagining a terror event, and it was done with EU funding. Nearly £1 million were given the British government to do this thing, so it's not on its own initiative, and huge preparations and people imagining they were on a train crash, and there were anguished screams of people trapped in the train, and terrifically vivid wounds and blood stains put on the bodies.
About during the drill in London?
Yeah, this is right in the end of February and beginning of March, just south of London, somewhere in Kent. Why did all this happen just then? We never had anything like this in Britain before, as Ole points out. And then rapidly following up on that, design disaster, as Ole said, they've got photographs which they can use for fabricated terror, whatever they want.
We'll look at a series of photographs and see if we spot some that look as though they're probably from that event, that drill in advance.
Yeah, and then, as Ole said, on the streets of London, on the spring equinox of all times, the 20th of March, there was a huge, the biggest ever anti-terror thing with all sorts of police combined with the SAS, that's a special sort of tough guy section of the British Army. They're real killers, the SAS, and the police combining with the SAS is rather alarming. They were out roaming the streets of London, preparing for, as they said, 10 different terror attacks. 10, that's what they said. They said normally we only prepare for one or two. We're paying for 10 different.
Yeah.
The two events in France that have happened, Charlie Hebdo and the Bataclan events, have given the pretext for this massive drill. So that was the equinox, right? And 2 days later, this event happened. I find that the timing of this very significant, Jim. It was on the full moon, and that immediately is the beginning of the big Jewish festival of Purim, okay?
Yes.
It's about a mass murder process of Persians. The Jews were within the Persian Empire, in the way that the story is told in the Book of Esther, and you get this mass murder of Persians celebrated and honored together with certain tactics of deception whereby this is brought about on the festival of Purim, okay? I noticed that was also actually just the configuration for the Iraq war. It was Purim at the full moon at the equinox. I think this is a rather sinister date that we get it happening just then, so close to the big British.
Since that's a date significant in the Jewish calendar, that would suggest this could be an Israeli or Mossad op.
Well, it does seem to have that signature. I mean, I think the dates are terribly interesting here. This is 22-3 in using the English dating, and suppose we compare that with the Spanish 11-3, right? The 11th of March. Then in the American dating, it's 3-22, which directly echoes the Skull and Bones, the number of the American Skull and Bones lodge.
Right. I've actually visited the location of the tomb in on the Yale campus. I've been there myself. I didn't enter the building, but I've been outside of it.
Right, scary business. And as I expect you to have also noticed, the time when these things happen also looks to be quite significant. The bomb on the tube is reported as going off 11 minutes after 9. Now, there was some dispute about this initially, but they seem to have agreed on that time now, and it's up on Wikipedia. The bomb at 11 minutes after 9, and for the British London bombing, the first bomb went off back in 2005 at 11 minutes before 9, okay? So this is a 9-11 type pattern, which is kind of thrums through. These funny numbers do turn up in these events, as somehow being the signature of the perpetrators.
Yes, yes, yes. I think that's right. Ole.
No, I just want to say that this might sound like fantasy things for people who are not aware of these operations, but when you see the pattern being repeated again and again and again and again,
yes,
and also the date and the times and the locations, it's always on Patriots Day or Veterans Day or Halloween or Valentine's. So these dates are very, very apparently important to the people behind these operations because they keep repeating.
I think so too, in that it's a way of telegraphing to one another this is one of their ops. Here we have a map of what officially took place in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
Really three key locations. First, the airport attack, then the Malbeek subway station attack, and then explosives found in a house raid. And of course, all this was going on in Brussels, which is not only the capital of Belgium, but the location of the headquarters for both the European Union and for NATO. So there are multiple reasons why, you know, Brussels turns out to be significant. Nick?
Well, I've just been looking. I mean, we can talk about what happened at the airport and what happened at the subway. And it looks very, very sort of third-hand and doubtful and fictional. And I'm finding it very hard to believe that 35 people died and 300 people are injured.
Yes.
I'm finding that extremely difficult to believe. But let me just comment on the house raid, which you're showing in this picture. Miraculously, they knew within a couple of hours where the house was, and they raided it, and they found the ingredients for the explosive TATP. In other words, loads of acetone and loads of hydrogen peroxide. And acetone peroxide, and also they found the black ISIL flag, just the thing you would leave behind.
Yes.
Flag to commit suicide, you know.
That's right. You have to carry an ISIS flag with you.
Well, this echoes the problem with the London bombings. They were trying to figure out what explosive they could claim had been used by the four young lads back in 2005, and the story kept changing, and they tried to claim it was TATP made in a bomb factory, in a room, and this had so much problems that they finally gave up the claim. Basically, the problem is, and by the way, TATP is up on Wikipedia as the explosive supposedly used, okay? Now, the problem is, they'd have to have, for not just huge litres, 30 or so litres of hydrogen peroxide, which they allege they found huge quantities of these in that room, okay? But you've got to have quite concentrated peroxide. It's no use getting weak. And where do you possibly imagine they could have got it? Where do you think Muslim terrorist guys on a police wanted list, can they go to some chemist shop and buy peroxide? No, of course they can't. They can buy bottles of hair bleach, you know, which is very weak peroxide. But there's absolutely no way of them getting this strong peroxide needed for making explosives. So that story must necessarily unravel. And also, if it was there, we'd have some sort of chemical report certifying they'd found traces of TATP in that room, and likewise found traces of TATP in the Brussels airport, which I'm fairly sure they won't ever find, okay? And Wikipedia is also claiming that these are nail bombs. All three of these are supposed to be nail bombs, which means that all the 300 people wounded would have to have wound marks of nails tearing into their flesh. And I very much doubt whether that will happen.
That's very good, because, of course, in the Boston bombing, they were supposed to have had these pressure cooker bombs that were loaded with nails and other pieces of metal, and yet I haven't seen any indication of anyone who was injured by a nail or what have you. So I think those are excellent points, Nick. Yeah. I just point out here, in relation to the slide we have ahead of us, that this is supposed to have been committed by two Belgian brothers and an unidentified third man who blew themselves up in the attacks. I think they're more confident in claiming the brothers blew themselves up than the third man, and that they occurred 4 days after the capture of the fellow who was supposed to have been the sole surviving direct participant in the Paris attacks. But we have a lot of reason to question whether the Paris attacks were not just another orchestrated event as well. Ole.
I tell you, when you look at the way they build up the scenario of these attacks, you have the Salah Abdel Salam. They claim that I totally agree with you. I mean, he has nothing to do with the Paris attacks except being the patsy. They claim that he was arrested on Friday together with other people also that was wounded. And I've heard reports that it was the exact same brothers that was arrested. And then suddenly they're there at the airport, not wounded. Also, just before the Paris, November 13 happened, Jihadi John, I think it was, in the UK, were arrested with the exact same time span before this happened. So they have, this is sort of like a standard part of these drills, where it's important to see that these operations are not carried out in one country alone. Very often it's cooperated in different countries, where they add to the effect by doing it in different countries. So people think, oh my God, it's not only here, it's over there, it's everywhere.
Yes.
And then you have, I just want to also mention regarding the explosives found that the official story, as far as I heard, which keeps changing, was that they had made bombs and placed them in big suitcases. But unfortunately, when they got the cab, they phoned for the cab to come to the house, the bags were too big, so they couldn't get it in the car. So they had to leave some of them in this apartment, and that's where they were then found. But once again, if you think about people who are gonna sacrifice their life for something they really believe in, don't you think they would have thought so? Like not just thinking about their own, that they had to bring their passport when they blow themselves up, but you know, to get bags of the right sort, and how big can they have been? To get into a cab. And if there were three people, normally a cab can take at least four, so you could have like two or three suitcases inside if they were that important. And then, of course, the famous flag. I'm just waiting for them to find the passport. I mean, where is the passport?
Yes.
That is the one.
Like the magic passport of 9/11, after the destruction of two 500,000-ton buildings, steel and concrete, a passport made of cloth and paper miraculously survives.
But Jim, you have in London at the 7/7 bombings, the same passport was found in three different subway stations.
The same passport?
Including, as far as I know, the driver's license of this guy. But there was only one slight problem. He did not have a driver's license. You see,
well, it's amazing how they muck up. You know, these are guys who are not rocket scientists, and they're faking this stuff. They don't always pull it off right. As Nick, of course, discovered that the whole scenario in London was vitiated because a train from Luton that the young men would have had to take to have been at the subway stops in time had been canceled. So that the whole claim that they were responsible had no basis whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Complete fabrication. Nick. If you wanted to add anything, now here we have a diagram of where the explosives are supposed to have taken off inside the airport during that aspect of the attack.
Okay, well, let's focus on what happened then. At 8 o'clock in the morning, it seems that a smoke bomb went off in the airport, and most of the ordinary visitors and passengers ran off. So you then see pictures of loads of luggage left behind with smoke everywhere, okay? And then very soon afterwards, within a minute, the second bomb went off. It seems to have been in the ceiling somewhere, and it brought down a load of ceiling tiles, whatever it was. Ceiling tiles collapse, and then after that, the crisis actors come on the stage, and you see them milling about with their sort of carefully designed bits of blood here and there. But the astonishing thing about all the pictures we see, I suggest, is you don't see any real wounded people. You never see anyone in pain. If there are dead bodies, we don't see any. There's an astonishing absence of that. That's the first point I'd like to make.
Well, we're going to look at a lot of those photographs, Nick, yes.
And then perhaps just come on to, you've got a vivid picture here, between checkout tills 8 and 9 of where the bomb is supposed to have gone off, we'll come to a problem with one of the key photographers in this area who was standing right there, just a few feet away from it, and she takes the iconic photographs that everyone's seen around the world, and there's no hint that she sees any suicide bomber or anyone wanting to blow themselves up or blow themselves up.
Nor any indication that she herself was injured in spite of being in such close proximity to the location of the explosion.
Yeah, she gives total fantasy-type accounts of so many people with their legs blown off, you know, everybody with their legs blown off, and other people describe people being thrown up in the air by the blast, and so forth. Yet she can apparently be there without getting a scratch, and then the various pictures she posts up on her Facebook page do not show anybody with limbs blown off or anything.
This sounds an awful lot like Boston, you know, Massachusetts, because we had, beneath the smoke, we had bodies with missing body parts, but there was no blood because they were using amputee actors in Boston. It's not even clear they had any amputee actors here in Brussels, Nick.
It's not, no. But I do think there's strong analogies with the Boston use of this troop. And as Ollie has elsewhere suggested, it could be the same traveling troupe of terror artists.
The same troupe. Ollie, I think you also believe that could be true.
This is something I've been putting forward for a long time, where I truly believe that what we're seeing is like a global tour of terror, like a Rocky Horror Show on global tour, where it is used in combination with ice cold killers from the Gladiator Network, where the whole operation is carried out. And the scene is set with the same background extras, the same actors, the same marketing agencies, military advisors, experts on explosives and smoke bombs, and so on, flown from country to country, NATO country and the US. These are the countries that are involved, from air base to air base, and then transported in buses to location where they carry out the same
thing,
the same scenario. And I spoke to Chip Tatum, a CIA whistleblower who's been involved in false flags during his career, and he said it's not only possible, it's plausible that this is what is taking place. So because they need to control all parameters, that's the whole thing. They need to be able to control everything. And so this is why they try to have a small group as possible, so that they can use the same and be very secure that there are no leakage, you know, no whistleblowers. And people keep asking me, yeah, but how can they keep it quiet, you know? And I asked Chip, he said, it's very easy. You pay them well. That's a very good way of keeping, get people to keep quiet. And if not, you just beat someone up in front of the group, or you kill someone in front of the group, or you kill their child or their grandmother or whatever, and you make the rest of the group very aware of that they're in line if they don't shape up. And that's the way it's done.
Those are excellent, excellent points.
Yeah,
I'll return to Chip later in our discussion this evening, because he has another contribution by virtue of his experience to make here. This is the photograph of the purported brothers on the left, and many remarks have been made about them wearing left-hand gloves only, and the party on the right is supposed to be elusive, and I think not yet identified. Actually, as I look at the person on the right, I think it may be a woman.
Yeah. Well, these are the trolleys in which the huge bags that Ole was mentioning earlier, you know, which wouldn't probably fit into the taxis, the huge bags are supposed to be in those trolleys there, carrying their bomb, TATP, which, by the way, needs a special cooling equipment to keep it cool, and it needs a detonator. And we've had this outrageous bit of fantasy, which somehow the media printed, that these people might be wearing only one glove, those two guys, and it's quite a blurred picture, so you can't really see, but they might, okay? And if they were, well, I mean, so what? Oh, there might be some detonator inside the glove. Well, this is really the height of unbridled fantasy. And this was put out, let's be clear, this is not a CCTV. There's no time and date stamp on it. So what the hell is it? You know, apparently this was put out within a couple of hours of the event, even though the whole airport was closed down. Somehow this came out within a couple of hours, and we're in a situation where there seems to be no authentic CCTV released, which obviously we're quite used to with these kind of events. The first thing you expect is that all the CCTV disappears. But so this is, I believe it's possibly the first image we're given, or certainly one of the first. And so within 2 hours, you've got this mad idea of, oh yeah, these two are the suspects because, you know, they've got a look sort of dark hair and whatever. And they might have bombs in their trolleys, which is about as absurd as it gets, really, isn't it?
The taxi driver who claims to have brought them said that their suitcases were very, very heavy and they had difficulty getting them out of the cab. But by, in and of itself, of course, having a heavy suitcase wouldn't necessarily send alarms, though some questions were raised. And we might even be skeptical about the cabbie himself, though my impression is he seemed to be giving an honest report. Oli?
I just know that when you look at these false flags, there are some standard ingredients. There's the drill, the patsy, the Muslim terrorist with a name that sounds like Abdul Karim Karunkara, very hard to pronounce, and so on. Here we go again. I mean, you have no idea how to even pronounce it. And then the suspects, the photos are always, there's only one every single time or two, and they're always blurry. So you can't, even though there's high-tech super-duper surveillance cameras that they charge you millions to install, they're always very blurry and very hard to see. And this is standard operation in these things.
I agree. Now, here's some photographs of the damage there. Nick, would you care to comment on this? This is from inside the airport, of course.
Yeah, well, you see a lot of ceiling tiles have come down here. People standing around, and there's nobody really hurt. But we don't really...
We have a couple of pixelated images there that are supposed to, be concealing bodies to spare our feelings.
Well, maybe, yeah. But in general, the whole scenario doesn't have anybody, anything remotely looking, who really looks like as if they're in pain in general.
Oli, any thoughts about this? Yeah.
Yes, big time. It said that the bomb was somewhere to the right of this big sculpture, and I think often when these things happen, there's some kind of a sculpture with Freemasonic feet in it, and maybe we can get back to the sculpture later on. But if you look at the damages, all the damages are to the ceiling itself. There's no damages to the walls or the TV screens or in the background, the banners, everything. There's nothing where there should have been. I mean, an explosion comes from the epicenter. The force is aimed upwards in the same quantity in all different directions at the same time. And here we have only damages from above. And the CCTV footage that was released, it turned out that that was totally fake, that it came from a similar event in Russia, one in Moscow.
In Minsk in 2011, yes.
Yeah, I have not looked into these two ones because I don't know if they're real either, but the CCTV footage was absolutely fake. That was not the real one. But I've seen now that they released a new CCTV footage, and in that footage, you can see very clearly that the explosion is right above the crowd, going under the the tiles in the ceiling and downwards. So for sure, if there was an explosion, it was under this, just like Nick said, from above and downwards, not from what we're being told, a suicide bomber on ground level.
And how would you get a heavy suitcase up above the tiles and the ceiling of an airport, for crying out loud?
No, we're talking about pre-positioned explosives here.
Well, just to comment on what Ollie said about the, it's totally interesting about the totally fictional CCTV being put out on the day by CNN News, and it turns out to be from years ago in Russia, and this, I think there was also fake CCTV put out about the tube, whatever happened on the metro. So there were two different lots of fake CCTV put out, or one was with a phone camera and the other was CCTV. And the independent newspaper then the next day ran a story saying those were mistaken and claiming it was mistaken. And it tried to blame social media, that the social media somehow got hold of these old pictures and was running them. Whereas this was not the case at all. It was the official media, like CNN News, which put out these in lieu of any proper CCTV from the airport. This is what we should all be focusing on. Why can they not show the CCTV from the airport? And Ole has just explained very clearly why they cannot show it, because it wouldn't show any suicide bomber, and it would show stuff showering down from the ceiling. That, in a nutshell, is why they can't show the CCTV.
And now here's a scene that might be from the London drill, it would seem to me. And notice you even have numbers on the tops of the cars. This is pretty strange. Nick, what do you think about this?
Well, could we just go back? Did Ole have something to say about those?
No, the CCTV footage is very important because every single time there is a false flag, they are turned off. It is standard procedure, and here again turned off. And also, one standard ingredient is that this mobile or cell phone network is blocked when these operations take place. At the time it happens, boom, they get blocked. And this is because the people behind these operations need total control of the information flow going out, so that they can control what is getting out into the world. And here we had the exact same thing, that the Belgian police, even their radio system and phone system stopped working. So I have an article where they said that they had to rely on WhatsApp and Facebook to communicate during this operation.
Amazing. That's simply absurd, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that reminds me of the London bombing, where the first thing I knew about it at my home in the morning was that the phone wasn't working, you know. And also, it was found on, with the Sandy Hook story, it was shown that the perpetrators closed down the normal police channels.
They took control of the emergency communication system in Connecticut early in the morning, yes. Dennis Camino discovered that.
Yeah, right.
But this is standard procedure. It was in at the London, the Oslo bombings. It was at the JFK assassination. So many of them. It's a standard thing. When Estonia was blown to MS Estonia, the ferry was done. The whole radio system along the Baltic coast was shut down and blocked while this was on. It's standard. So this is one of the things that I always look for. Did this happen? And boom, once again, following the template exactly.
Very good. Switching to the subway, then, this looks to me extremely artificial. I mean,
this is the rehearsal we were talking about earlier at the beginning of March in Kent, in England. Seven different tube trains smashed up, and It was some big tower fell on Waterloo Station. That's what they'd imagine. But this is an imagination of Waterloo Underground Station getting totally smashed up. This is what £1 million of EU money was spent on.
This is just ridiculous, Nick. What a complete and total waste.
But also, one thing that is quite kind of scary, I think, is that they built the entrance to Waterloo Station as well as a replica. So they got like footage that looks exactly like people is coming out from Waterloo Station, but it's not. It's a power station in Kent.
Yeah. Yeah. How blatant can you get? The only possible reason for doing that is so that you could claim that Waterloo had actually been hit when it was all going on this elaborate and very expensive set.
Well, there is a big thing about what they call resilience training that they try to claim that businesses need to practice for some sort of disaster that might happen and help you to cope with it when it does happen. And Peter Power, the great British,
Who organized and ran the London bombing.
He's like Britain's terror czar, and he organizes these big, resilience training things for your industry, how to build in anti-terror stuff into your industry. And this is now an enormously enhanced and an enlarged version of this. Nobody's ever thought of doing it on this scale before. I would agree with you. I think this is very, shouldn't be allowed.
How dumb are we supposed to be? I mean, really, it's outrageous. They do this stuff so openly, so blatantly, right before our very eyes.
Well, they would say they're practicing for terror so they can cope with it when it happens.
Yeah, right. Ole.
No, for your security, that's the whole thing. It is for our security that we have.
Right, for our security.
Yeah, it's so considerate. Can I just go back to the CCTV footage again? Because
I've got an image from it and a story about it coming up, Ole. I want to hit it when we get there. This is supposed to be from the explosion in Brussels.
Yeah.
And this photo is the one it keeps saying when it's spread in media, it's alleged photo from this thing happened. It keeps saying that underneath. And then you have the masked parts where it looks like they're body parts or something gross that we couldn't handle to see. But I managed to get hold of the original photo without masking.
There and it is.
There's nothing there.
Like a roast beef there.
If even that, I've been really looking into it, and it's like, I don't know what it is, but it sure isn't a body. That's
for sure. No.
It would be very interesting to check the train or whatever it is in the background, if that would look similar to one of the trains at the...
This is very likely. As Jim indicated, it comes straight from the terror drill in south of England a month before. But, on the story, the Brussels tube blew up in between stations, didn't it? It was supposed to move out of one station and was in the tunnel when it blew up. Surely that is the story, isn't it? Or have I got it wrong? Because this is a platform here. It's right.
Right. This is a platform. This is in a station. Yeah.
As far as I've understood, but these stories keep changing. This is the thing. Also, the number of dead and wounded keep changing, going up and down, up and down, which is also standard in these operations.
Well, I just saw pictures of them getting out of the train, and I thought it looked as if they were in the middle of a tunnel.
Yeah, but it said that when the explosion took place, the power was cut, and that was what stopped the other train. At least that's what I understood, and that's where they film when people get off the train.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Right. Right. So this is supposed to be in a station.
Now, here's some implausibilities about the brothers. They both had a criminal history. They both obligingly left lots of ISIS flags and even a suicide note on a computer in a dumpster. And why would anyone look in a dumpster for a computer? I mean, this is so ridiculous. It's virtually comic. All the images provided in the media have false flag earmarks, fake blood, disinterested bystanders, putting weight on a presumed mangled limb and so forth. And we're going to look at a number. follow-up interviews of smiling, giggly people claiming to have been terrified. Detailed background history of both Patsies immediately made available in all the major media, where the authorities had raided the apartment of one Patsy only the week before, who was tied to both the Minsk attack in 2011 and to the other Patsy. This is a bit much, isn't it?
Well, the Patsies always have some kind of involvement with the police and security forces, so they've got a handle on them. And there were some sort of minor criminals in Brussels, it seems, these two. Whatever it was the police told them to do, you know, they presumably didn't realise that quite what they were going to be accused of, I would surmise.
But I have to even doubt these patsies, because
yes.
when you look at these things, very often these are constructed identities that doesn't even exist in real life. You know, they're photoshopped images where they put together different faces. They create identities. This is standard procedure in these intelligence operations, where they just create an identity, make a paper trail so that it looks like they're alive. At least these trails are often not that long. So this is also once you start tracking down victims and people that are involved in these operations, it would only go very short. You know,
it never leads anywhere. Yes.
It never leads anywhere. There's no birth certificates. There's no, if you go to the town where they come from, if you go to the city, if you really start looking, they're not there. Or they've been there very, very short and very recently. They moved in and then they disappeared. And this time as well, we have like this, two Dutch victims where I've been in touch with people in from the town where they come. They say, we have no idea. We've never heard of these people. You also have very often the victims or the witnesses have some kind of connections with people in high positions or with media, somehow media, they're journalists or they have, in music or film or theater or sometimes sports as well, these type of jobs. And here we have again, they keep popping up journalists and so on among the people that are being interviewed. Like there's one woman, American woman, she's sitting with a blanket together with her husband. They're being interviewed once again, smiling, not shaking, not upset, very calm. And she's a TV host from CBS Baltimore.
Really?
Yeah. And there's another guy. There was two siblings with they're American, but with a Polish name that I haven't got it here. I don't even know how to pronounce it. But it is said that many of these victims disappeared. It's like they're missing. If you've seen the reports, this person is missing, this person is missing, this person is missing. I mean, what do they think, that this bomb has just disintegrated them so that they can't be found anywhere? But they're missing. The families are looking for them. And then this guy, Alexander, and then this Polish name that starts with an S, he and his niece, were there at the counter when they exploded. You look at the photos of his LinkedIn information and other photos, they don't look alike at all. This guy, one guy is like very, very overweight, and the other photos of him, when you follow down this paper trail, they look very different. He's almost normal weight and not curly hair. The other one has curly hair. And then his girlfriend that is looking for him, desperately in media saying, oh, please, please, where's my darling? She's the daughter of the former U.S. ambassador in Copenhagen. And Copenhagen is one of the other places where we've had recent attacks here.
Hmm. Fascinating. So now here I introduce this because you're talking about brothers and in Boston. I mean, the blatancy of framing the Patsies was outrageous because here you can see the backpacks, the FBI, as a conclusion of its report, explained that the backpacks that exploded were both black nylon backpacks. And even in the indictment for Zocher, the indictment stated that the backpacks that exploded were black nylon backpack. But notice, here you have the two brothers. Neither is wearing a black nylon backpack, which led a retired professor of law, John Remington Grand, to conclude that because the backpacks don't match, there wasn't even probable cause for an arrest, much less an indictment or a conviction at trial.
Standard procedure. And
because the alternative media cracked the case already, be discovering that Kraft International employees who were wearing black nylon backpacks had planted bombs, they sent out an FBI stooge 4 days later to say, don't look at any other photographs than these, and presented this photograph of the brothers, or actually separate of them. But where Marette, the aunt of the boys, pointed out to me that this was photoshopped or fake because Hammerlin, clean-shaven here, actually had a beard. And I asked her if she could prove it, and she started sending me one photograph or link after another. Tamerlan in bed, he's with his cat, he's got a beard, a link to a gymnasium where he's working out with his brother, he's got a beard. He was called by a friend the day of the bombing, who was relieved to discover he wasn't anywhere in the vicinity. They had dinner that night together, he had a beard. There's a surveillance photograph from a convenience store where Zocher's inside, Tamerlan's outside, he has a beard. When he's arrested and stripped naked and put into a police car, he has a beard. When his body is presented, he still has a beard. It's all completely outrageous how amateurish they are in faking all of this.
But this just shows that they have absolutely no respect for us, which we don't even deserve, I think, because how many of these operations have they been able to pull off so badly carried out, and we still buy it again and again and again.
I know, Ole. So that one of the first revelations here suggesting this was an elaborate hoax was that the CCTV of the explosion was actually from Minsk in 2011. I think that this was very good of the Independent. I mean, I don't think you'd find an American newspaper who would publish this, Nick.
But yeah, you can just see the time. You can just about see the timestamp here, can't you? 2011. So I hope if there is some.
Yeah, you can read it. 2011, right on there.
Yes.
But that's the 2011 is to the right, but the one to the left that had the timestamp 2016 on it. You know, the 22nd of June. So it was totally manipulated.
All right.
Because look, I mean, you got these figures in these in these positions that are the same and the same background. It's slightly enlarged on the left, but it's the same image exactly. Yeah. That's pretty disgusting. That's really pretty blatant.
Right.
Now here is an analysis by Wayne Madsen, who I regard as perhaps our best investigative journalist in the United States, who believes that this was a resurrection of Gladio. My own suspicion is that it's entirely possible it was an Israeli Mossad op for the reasons I've already explained. France was becoming too enthusiastic about Palestinian statehood.
Right.
Pulled off Charlie Hebdo. Obviously orchestrated. There was an X on the roadway for the car to park its right wheel, so they get the surveillance camera, gets the best field of vision. They shoot a police officer lying on the sidewalk in the head, but it doesn't explode like a pumpkin. And a woman says she wants the police come down later and lay down the blood. So between Charlie Hebdo and Paris, there's been a tremendous suppression of the Palestinian movement. And they've introduced draconian laws about hate speech and so forth, which seems to me to be part of the Israeli agenda.
Yeah, well, Belgium was on the verge it was said that it was going to recognize Palestine, wasn't it? It said that about a year before.
And the Brussels, the Belgian Parliament, Nick, is the next to consider the question of Palestinian statehood. Hmm. So I view this as sending a message to the Parliament as to what you can expect if you go forward a Palestinian state.
Yeah, well, if the Gladio structure still exists, I mean, maybe it does. NATO's still there, and this is a kind of underbelly of NATO where secret stuff that should never have happened took place. let's recognize what looks like being the fundamental difference. Since about 2012, state fabricated terror has used actors, and it's kind of cheaper than having real deaths. This is a huge change which seems to have taken place, and we're debating this big question. Were there really over 30 people killed?
Yes.
Or is it done by actors? And it's very hard for us now to give any definite answer, but that is the huge difference between what's happening now and what happened with Gladio, where people really were shot to bits.
Yeah. What the part? Ole, you want to add to that?
I just want to say that just like you say, in the old days they had real victims, then came actors, crisis actors. But I also believe that there are some operations, for instance, when they blew up the government building in Oslo, where on one side of the government building there were real victims, and on the other side of the building, where all the photographers took these horrific images that were spread out in global media, were crisis actors. And I think sometimes this is the case, that there might be real victims, but and the images that are being brought out in media, they need to have, you know, as much of a dramatic effect to them. So that's why they make sure that the makeup and the blood and the damages, all of these things are there, so that they can get the impact they're looking for.
I'll just point out,
Jim, here are the Moon Rock books.
Right.
Hasn't seen them. And it's the concept of nobody dying in these events.
Yeah.
That is the extraordinary concept. And we're wondering, the France events look like being that. I'm quite sure with Charlie Hebdo that nobody died, except that unfortunate police officer later on. And nobody died in the theatre of the, that we were shown. Not many people died at the Bataclan event. Some might, but I don't think many people did. We certainly didn't see any dead bodies. We saw dummies, okay? And that's another strange feature that's just come in recently. Use of dummies.
Yes.
And by the way, there was a dummy scene in this airport drama. Right after the bomb, whatever happened, went off, you see a man clutching a little baby type dummy.
I've got a photo of it, Nick.
Right. Now,
let's
ask the question, in which events do dummies happen? Well, it happened in the Boston Marathon. There's quite a chapter in your book about that, simulated. If it happened at the MH17 shoot down, what we saw in that field with debris and stuff, had those bodies limply lying around, not looking. It happened at the Bataclan event when, as Ole pointed out in his interview, the limbs were bent in a way that human limbs wouldn't quite bend. The people, the apparent corpses in that Bataclan theatre image on 11/13/15 look like they have to be dummies, okay? It happened in Britain with the Drummer Lee Rigby episode.
Yes.
The soldier apparently beheaded and thrown into the middle of the road. That was some sort of rubber dummy.
That was a blatant case, Nick.
Blatant, yeah.
And then in San Bernardino, they used dummies too.
Did they? Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, well, so whatever the reason is for this amazingly pointless, horrific new art form, dummies are being carried around, and also that we saw dummies being used in that British anti-terror drill with all the trains breaking up, okay? That they had dummies that they used for this and that. Whatever the hell the point of this new necro-theatre of horror is supposed to be, they do want to use dummies.
Absolutely right. Now here, in fact, is the fake baby, which has arms, limbs that don't move. Its neck doesn't. Its head doesn't move. I mean, it's clearly fake. So there it is, right there. So Nick, you know, you're right on top.
Let's ask Ole what he thinks the point is.
The point of using
these dummies that are coming in now.
I believe that after 9/11, it came to a point where the people behind these operations were having massive problems with family members that did not back down to try and find out what happened to their
own. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially mothers. I mean, a mother that loses her child, it doesn't matter if that child is a grown-up 54-year-old, she has nothing to lose, and she will breathe down your neck until she finds out what happened. And I believe that the more people you kill in these operations, the more mothers you have that are pissed off following your butt all the time. So I think they came to a point where they just said, let's get rid of all of this problem. You know, let's do it, make it easy. So we go from real action to film stage action.
Because
the real impact is not through the event that happens on site. It is through media. That is the thing. What is pumped out through media? Because they need to hit globally. They need to hit multiple countries at the same time. So it doesn't matter how they got the footage, as long as that they control what is going out there.
Yeah. And it could also be a situation that if it's just a drill that doesn't really go live, a drill that just gets too much realism, that the police don't have to investigate it. If they don't have any records of deaths, no actual deaths recorded, the police are not obliged to investigate a state-funded terror drill. Could that be part of the reason?
I just know that the normal procedure in these cases is that the investigation that gets in and starts looking at these things is part of the operation. These are handpicked people, often with connection in the Freemasonic network they have. So that as soon as the bomb or the mass shooting or whatever it is happens, boom, their own investigation moves in, knocks out every ordinary, honest detective.
Right.
So that there will be no real investigation. They will, and normal police will not understand it. They will just be put and do things that, go out and guard this or security job or stuff like that. And then, the people in the investigation is totally under control of the same people that carried out these operations. So this is why I don't think we're looking at just a Mossad operation where it's an attack from outside the country. We're looking at cooperation where these countries, this is, I would say, on a level above national borders, because we're looking at the same power structure as behind the New World Order. This is the network we're looking at. And so they have the people carrying out the operation, but are totally being backed up on a local plane with logistics, cars, housing, food, all of these things. And also making sure that absolutely no one that was part of the operation will ever be taken in for questioning or anything like that. They will only focus on the patsy. That's the whole
thing. Well, Olin, when you say above the national level of government, isn't that the same as the NATO Gladio structure?
But NATO Gladio, Mossad, these people are working together. Chip Tatum, he's talking openly about many of these operations. They used to work with Danish soldiers or soldiers of fortune, Turkish, French, Mossad. It all depended on what was the operation about. And so if the CIA couldn't do it, they just said, okay, they phoned up Mossad and said, can you please take care of this one for us? And so these agencies look on a street level like they're separate, but once you get really high up in the top of the power pyramid globally, they're all connected, I would suggest.
Here we have a European basketball player who is among the victims. And notice the isolated area. There's no reason to think he was exposed to an explosion. This seems to me like the Barbara Olson of 9/11. Here you have this very familiar right-wing commentator frequently on television that people could relate to, and then they say, personally, I know someone who died on 9/11. It was Barbara Olson. So here they say, this basketball player, I've watched him play, and here he was injured in Brussels. I think this is another element of the PSYOP.
But look also the wall behind him. He's all blown up. The dark, from gunpowder or whatever it is from the explosion. It's look at the wall behind him. It's clean as a,
clear and unblemished.
Yes, yeah. There's nothing, nothing. And the people just walk around him. And then you see interviews with the guy. And as far as I know, he's an American basketball player. I saw an interview with him. He doesn't even look like this guy as far as I can
see. No, it could be a double. It could be a double.
Yeah, but they don't really look similar. And then he's lying there in the hospital bed, all cute and cuddly for the women to enjoy. And he's got like two plastic strips, you know, these things where you get in hospital. As I don't know about where you live, but where I've never seen that you need more than one. And there's always the name and text on it. And as far as I can see, when he's talking and moving around, there's no text on these things. And he gives this, they always have this emotional psyop that is involved as well. And this guy, when he was on the way to the airport, he was talking to this friend of his, and they were talking about faith and how vulnerable life is and so on.
Mm. Is that right? Just ironic, isn't it? Here's another actor on the ground who's, you know, looks like he's auditioning for a Hollywood part.
But look at, I mean, why is nobody helping this poor guy?
Right.
I mean, he's blown to pieces and nobody cares. And this guy, he's making out with his wife or something like that instead. And then you have what I think is absolutely amazing is that the people, I heard an interview with one guy that was in the explosion in the metro, and he had his whole head packed in with bandages like this, and he looked blue in his face. And then he said that he was taken into one of a nearby office where they were helping him. I mean, the streets were filled with ambulance and fire brigade and all of these things. But they were taken into a nearby office. And then they said that he was helped with his wounds and so on. And he said, I burned my hand, so I got a bucket of water to dip my hand in. But he forgets that his whole head is packed with You have the little girl, same thing there, bandages all over her head. And if you look at burns, I mean, go to a children's hospital. It is awful. It's horrendous. Mm. The agony and pain they are in, and also how drugged they are to keep the pain down. Here, they're crystal clear, laughing, smiling, talking straight.
Right, yeah. Well, here is the nearest we've got to a damaged, wounded person that I've really seen.
Yeah.
She's putting all her weight on that knee, which is supposedly bloody, and it's just not credible, you know. If you're in agony because your knee's gone wrong, you don't just stand there putting all your weight on it.
There's another photo of this girl in the red sweater just looking on, you know, at some of these allegedly wounded with no concern or apprehension as though it was just utterly routine. I don't know if I have it here, but we'll come back. But after the break, we have to take a break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my two extraordinary guests today, Ole Navigar, an expert on assassinations and covert ops, Nick Kohlerstrom, the world's leading expert on the London 7-7 London bombings. Stick around. You don't want to miss any of this. We'll be right back.
Okay, I got it.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on Network Radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You ready to make to come to the microphone so they'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. This
is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where this evening I have the great pleasure of hosting two of the world's leading experts on false flags and covert activities, Ole Damegaard and Nick Kullerstrom. Ole, I know you wanted to make some additional comments about this photograph.
No, it's just that it might seem that I'm taking this a little bit too far, but Nick has landed. Taking this a bit too far, but in many of these operations, I found that they even use product placement, that they use, for instance, if you look at the ISIS, I challenge you, you show me a photo of ISIS and there's a vehicle in that photo, I can tell you, I can assure you it would be a Toyota. So ISIS, sponsored by Toyota. And many in these operations as well, you will find Nike is so central in this whole thing.
I noticed that in the tunnel, the blackness of the tunnel, supposedly the blast, you saw a big, huge Nike sign on somebody's
No, but this is, and Charlie, it's so many operations where Nike is right there in the middle of it all. And also, more or less all footage taken by so-called terrorists or of terrorists are with GoPro cameras and so on. So they sneak it in, I would suggest. And here, when you look at this boy, maybe I'm taking it too far, but if you look at his shirt, it's got a very distinct red and green pattern on it with stripes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the pattern of Freddy Krueger, you know, personality in the Nightmare at Elm Street, Nightmare on Elm Street. The very same day that this happened, a new doll was released with exactly that shirt.
Really?
Exactly that color.
Really?
So, I don't know, but I'm just pointing it out.
Well, I think that's fascinating. Everyone wants a piece of the action.
That's it.
Here's something extraordinary. It turns out that this is the person who's supposed to have taken all the pictures at the Brussels airport. Her name is Ketevan Kardava.
Kardava, right. Yeah,
she claims
she was a few feet from the bomb.
Yeah. And she took all the photographs, Nick. She's a special correspondent for the Georgian Public Broadcaster, funded by the EU, interviews people such as the NATO Secretary General.
She's clearly
not a photographer, and this evidence is a smoking gun for NATO involvement. She even states she covered the Paris attacks, too.
For God's sake.
Also, if you look at the Freemasonic photo there with the one eye. Also, she's trained by the BBC. And I just want to point out also that, in these operations, very often they have a psyop going as well that was play ping pong with our subconscious. This is from Georgian public broadcasting, but the Georgia Guidestones, do you remember that? They were opened or whatever on the exact same date in 1980, on the 22nd of March. 1980.
No, were they?
Yeah.
22nd of March, 1980, the Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah, and here we have Georgia again. I'm just pointing things out. I can't swear that they are connected. I'm just pointing
out.
Well, Champs observed that ISIS was brought back on the same date too, some years back, so that, we have a convergence here of a whole lot of elaborate deceptions converging.
Yeah.
The famous speech when George Bush Sr. was the first time he was talking about the New World Order openly? That was on 9/11, but 10 years exactly on the day before 9/11, the attack.
It was, I agree,
Nice.
A very strange echoes in America, isn't it, 9/11?
Yeah, extraordinary.
Government.
Now get this, this young man on the left is a Mormon missionary who was not only survived Boston, but also Paris, and then he's in Brussels too. Tell me. We mentioned Chip Tatum. I learned from Chip that he actually served in the agency doing wet work using being a Mormon missionary as his cover.
Wow.
A Mormon missionary.
Yeah, and this kid's a Mormon missionary.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. I mean, this is what is the improbability of anyone being at all three locations on the occasion of those attacks? It has to be infinitesimal. If this could not have happened by chance.
Okay. Reminds me of Henry Kissinger's remark. He said, covert action should not be confused with missionary work.
Well, here we got a prime candidate for a player right there, all smiles.
Can I also point out that there was a Norwegian guy at the airport who was... he was at when the Oslo bombings took place. He was the guy that ran around and filmed the whole thing afterwards. And he was involved in military operations in Norway. He was now being interviewed by Norwegian TV about he was at the airport when it blew up here in Brussels.
Guy at the airport. Wow.
Exactly. So he was in the two places of these operations. And I also managed to find photos of him with in uniform with the UN emblem on the arm. So here I tell you, we're back to stay behind Gladio, these networks.
Does this indicate crisis actors at work? This guy, Mormon, was at all three different events. Does that show that?
I think he might have been a player. He might have been a participant. Well, yeah, I don't know about crisis actor, but there's something very odd with him, Nick. There's no doubt about it. Now, this confirms Ole's suspicion that the Mossad is working with the NATO people because of security at the airports where the Israeli firm ICTS.
Yeah.
It's always them. They're everywhere. When these operations happen, it is ICTS. And why are they not fired? If their security is that bad, why are they not fired? But instead,
that's right,
being used more and more and more.
Yes, they also failed on 9/11. They were responsible for security at the three airports involved in 9/11.
Yeah, and then 7/7. And also, you haven't mentioned that the Schiphol airport at Amsterdam, when that underpants bomber got on board, you know, they're going to, there's a plane flying to Detroit, if you remember, Christmas Day. Do you remember all that?
Yeah.
And he was allegedly caused some disturbance on the plane and got on in through the airport without a passport. And that was also with ICTS there, wasn't it?
Yep. And it's their cameras that keeps failing every single time.
Isn't that amazing? What a coincidence.
It is incredible.
This firm that everyone wants to have running their security can't do anything to keep the airport secure.
We need to spend more money on security.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a conspiracy, doesn't it, Holy?
Well, can I just say also that just before we continue here, that the day before the Brussels attack, there were some things happening in there. Just before the explosion, the U.S. Transportation Security Administration, the chief of that, the TSA, Peter Neffinger, he arrived at the airport just before the explosion.
Did he?
Attending the Brussels Forum, it's a policy conference, was Nicholas Rasmussen, the director of the U.S. National Counterterrorism Center, and Camille Stewart, policy advisor to the Department of Homeland Security. They were there.
Were they? All right.
And also the day before the Brussels attack, the German Marshall Fund, which is an NGO closely aligned with the goals of George Soros' various European operation, wrapped up its Brussels forum in the same town. And in attendance were a number of Israelis and noted Washington insiders. Among the Israelis were Uzi Arad, a former Mossad officer and national security advisor of Benjamin Netanyahu, and Dan Meridor, former Israeli intelligence minister. And also there was a... there was a whole bunch of people from Washington, Brussels, and Mossad meeting just before this. And it was the same just before November 13 attacks. And they were also in Copenhagen, just where there was a massive drill on the 11th of November. They come and they have these meetings and then it's carried out.
Yeah, right.
Well, you mentioned George Soros. There's quite a story there. He appears to have contributed perhaps as much as $500 million to destabilize Ukraine. He funded the protesters in Ferguson, Missouri. He's buying up rifle and weapon manufacturing companies, most recently Marlin, and shutting them down to deprive Americans of their right to keep and bear arms by cutting off the supply. And he gave $700,000 to John Kasich to keep him in the competition, along with Ted Cruz, in opposition to Trump, I think possibly not realizing that greatly enhances Trump's probability of obtaining the nomination. A Princeton expert observed that as long as Kasich stayed in, that Trump's probability of getting the nomination was around 90% or better, but that if Kasich took out, it would drop to 50-50. So this man is having a disproportionate influence on American history and even foreign affairs, which my understanding has been no private citizen is legally entitled to interfere in the foreign affairs of the nation, but he's doing it.
He's doing a lot in Europe as well, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating what Ollie's found out about what was happening the night before or the day before. I haven't seen anyone else saying that. I think that's so important to discover these things.
Hmm.
Was there something about something happening in Antwerp, some sort of drill happening in Antwerp?
Yes, there was, because I always look for the drills. And there was a drill in a sports palladium in Antwerpen, which is only some 25 minutes by train from the airport. So it's very close by. Mm-hmm. It was a big operation there. They were had extras. They were staging a big event there, and it finished like 10 o'clock in the evening, and then boom, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that is very much the key. I haven't seen that in any English language text on the web, Ollie, so I think that's quite important.
The thing is, I'm multilingual, so I check, you know, Scandinavian press and Dutch and German and all of these things to try and get as broader picture as possible.
Yeah.
Well, here we have a story from the New York Times weaving the narrative that there were links between the Paris bombing and Brussels, and of course all this is supposed to be traced back to ISIS and so forth, but I think it's very clear that's simply the narrative we're being told, and not really a good approximation to truth.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, this might be time to bring in the statement by the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan, made just 4 minutes before, 4 days before the event, and he more or less predicted it. He said that the bomb that went off in Antwerp could as well go off in Brussels, and you'd better watch out. And he was very furious. He felt Belgium was not condemning some group he thought was a terrorist group. And he was warning them that they might deserve to have this event happen to them.
They might deserve, huh?
Yeah, he said you're sleeping with snakes that might bite you and you're dancing with the devil. Sort of furious phrases he used.
This guy's a very arrogant and obviously diabolical figure who isn't interested in the welfare of other people but only in enhancing his own power and wealth.
Well, yeah, okay. And he might know something about Mossad or whoever is putting up ISIS. And that would have been his basis for making that prediction, which then very soon came true.
Yes. Only any comment on the alleged Paris-Brussels connection?
Yeah, it's just baloney. I mean, they're just showing the patsies, how the patsies are connected. So they're using the same patsies, but I mean, I would say that the connection is the whole operation behind it, the real operation. They're totally connected, and I'm going to show some very distinct evidence here a little bit later.
Right here, for example, Ole?
Here, for example.
Talk about it.
When I found this, if you look at the lower part of this photo, that is the image from the Bataclan Music Theater.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Very, very odd photo. And in the middle, the lower part, you can see there's one woman there lying with her knees out to the sides. And this is one of the bodies that when you really start focusing in on, you will see that she's doing things with her legs that you cannot do. This is what is called a Kappa cadaver, which is used in anything from exercises to films. But what really I was trying to find out was this very strange pattern of blood painted on the floor around these bodies. And I thought that it was a heart. And I thought that I thought that they used that because they saw Paris as the city of romance. But what I found was that when I saw on Finnish TV, suddenly there was this the above image where I saw the logo of the Brussels airport, and it's, if you look at it, that is what is painted on the floor, I would suggest.
Very, very close facsimile, I agree. It's very similar.
If you see the lower part of that logo is longer than the top one, and that is exactly also what we see on the floor. And then Brussels Airport, the heart of Europe. I mean, where would you stab with a terror attack? You would do it right in the heart of Europe.
Yes.
And I think that was painted there to as an upcoming
precursor,
event.
Wow, yeah.
In anticipation, a sign for those who understood it.
Yeah. And also when you look at the rest of this photo, which is not there now, up among the seats and so on, you will see that there's like five or six people in dark. They look like they're dressed in black.
Yeah, right.
looks like they are holding a candle in front of them. And I put in some presentations, I put that image and then compared it with photos taken from real satanic rituals. And it's exactly their identity. So, and I've spoken to people in the police service and medical services and so on about this photo from the Bataclan, and they say absolutely no way would there not be people there trying to help them, or to there would be medical.
If it was real, there'd be all the medical people and the police, and there'd be stretchers, there'd be ambulances, and none of that happened.
I was very confused about how was this painted, because it said that they dragged bodies around in the blood to make this. But I mean,
It was done with a mop.
But I tell you, I don't think so either, because I found very similar photos of a blood trail like that from an attack in Israel, where they claimed that two Palestinian guys went into a synagogue and killed four Israelis. And there was exactly the same type of blood pattern in the whole hallway pulled out. So it almost looks like, for me, that they used one of these cleaning machines from a supermarket, you know, when they drive around and hear that they've driven around, but they, instead of cleaning fluid, they put ketchup, you know, or theater
blood. Yeah, or cow's blood, you know.
Something like that. But
before that, they took up all the carpets of the Bataclan Theatre, took up all the carpets, removed all the seats.
Yeah.
So this isn't just what is left when people go out. This is.
Oh, Nick, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. They've taken up the carpet.
Yeah, this is just bare cement floor here you're looking at, and all the seats have been removed. So it's a total restaging. As if the Bataclan people said, look, we don't want our carpets messed up by all this.
I don't agree with you there. I think the carpet is covered, because just like you say, they got a very beautiful carpet and they got the seats and so on. So if you look at it, they put another material on top of it.
A tarp?
Yeah, something like that. But also, if you look at the way that the blood from the victims have been running, if you look at the... It looks from the ones in the lower part of the picture that it's running down and to the left.
Yeah.
It's fluid, you know, so it will always run the same way. But then if you look at the victims to the left, up further to the left, the blood has been running down and towards.
And so, that's inconsistent indeed.
But then even worse is that if you look down there in the left corner, can you see... If you really enhance it, you will see that there's a golden mask, a death mask made of gold.
Uh-huh.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
It's hard to spot in such a
small... Well, it's near the extension, the bar extension there. Just go an inch and an inch from the corner. Just go in 1 inch and up 1 inch.
And the whole thing... left-hand corner. There's this very, very satanic theme in this whole thing. And also, I found two videos that were released just 1 week before the Bataclan massacre, or the alleged massacre.
Alleged massacre, yeah.
And it was one video was it was made by an artist called Phantom 666. There you go, 666. And anyway. He said, when you read his website, it says that his music style is Aztec rituals. And as far as I know, Aztec rituals are blood sacrifices.
Yeah, but those are human sacrifices.
Yeah. And here we have in this video, there's this young lady in a white dress that is walking around in the woods. And then she bumps into they look like zombies almost. It's a dance group of 8-10 young people, but they're all shut up. You know, they're in white t-shirts and black trousers, but with blood everywhere. And they have this song where the lyrics go, shot, 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 blood, blood, blood. And then they do the shooting thing, do, 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 like this. And it's very bizarre, the whole thing. And then in the end, these people with blood everywhere, they lie on top of her so that her dress gets all covered in or marked with blood. And then when she rises up, she has the same mask as Hannibal Lecter.
Really?
Yeah.
From Silence of the Lambs.
And there's another one. I tell you, it's so bizarre. One of the witnesses that was talking about this, they were lying in the Bataclan and there were rivers of blood everywhere and they were hiding underneath other corpses and so on. Her name, Celia Vial, I think her name was. She's the co-producer or legal advisor to the uprising of Hannibal Lecter, the follow-up film, you know. And in the other video that I found, made by the same artist, you have the music, you know, and there's one guy running around up and down in the alleys around the Bataclan, exactly where we saw some footage where there was this woman hanging one hand from a window and so on. He's running up and down there like if he's being chased. And then he gets into the Bataclan theater through the entrances, exactly where the shooters are said to come in. Then he walks in, he walks up on stage, you get a very good close-up on his shoes, which is a Nike, of course. And then he picks up a white mask and there's a massive big party going on. But while this whole thing is taking place in the video, they're like flashes of images, like they're only like 1/25th of a second. There's 10 of them, and I managed to get all of them, you know, get frame by frame by frame and take them out. And there are these images of a man and a woman with the same Hannibal Lecter mask, half of the face like a normal, half of it like this satanic or very, very evil mask. And one of the women with this mask on is, if I'm correct, the girlfriend of Nick Alexander, one of the victims, who have worked with Eagles of Death Metal as one of the guys who sold T-shirts and so on. It's just bizarre.
And it's just bizarre,
I can go on, I tell you, because it just goes really weird. But let's get back to this one.
Yeah, what do we have here, Oli?
This is from the drill in Antwerpen.
The drill in Antwerp, right.
Yeah,
I just want to remind any viewers that there's nothing on the web in English language about this drill in Antwerp that I could find. So I think Ole is telling us something fairly new here.
And there was a lot of extras involved, and I would very much like to make facial comparison of this group, if I can get hold of more photos or people that took part of this drill.
So this could be part of the traveling troupe that goes from country to country or city to city.
I would say that if you compare this to maybe the crowd that is running out from the airport or so on, I would not be surprised if we would find similarities. I think that in this operation, in this airport, there were lots of normal people that had no idea what was going on. But around the area where the bomb exploded, this is where these people would have been. So this is when you see interviews with people where they said they're shocked and they talk about the explosions and smoke and running and so on. They can be very honest and truthful. But it's just that they were not in the center of the operation.
Now, here are some shots from outside the airport, presumably, right?
Yeah, it's from outside the entrance. But if you look at, I've got another image as well of this entrance. But look at the glass, how strange it is. Can you take the next slide, please? Here, look at that. On top of it, there are no damage to the glass at all. I mean, not a single little nothing. And then they're totally blown out. But is that glass?
Very strange, Ollie.
What is that?
It's very strange.
It looks more like plastic to me or it sure does not look like glass. Or if it's glass, what type of glass is it? And here, my God, the drama is so intense. Oh, a bomb has exploded. You see a door that has been very carefully put down so that it doesn't get damaged. I mean, what is that? But this is the image we're being pumped out. And here you've got the logo again, Brussels Airport.
Yeah. Indeed, so, we do.
And what is that? And here, I want to point out, this is the Metro.
Metro, right.
Yeah. And if you see the CDV, the sign, it's for a company. That is to the left. The entrance and exit to the subway is to the in the center, exactly where you see people on the pavement.
Right.
Right to the right of that is the entrance down to an underground garage, a parking garage, which would be a perfect place to do all of these preparations. You know, this is where you get the vehicles in, you get the extras in, you do all the makeup facilities, all of these things. That would have been a perfect place where nobody would notice what's going on. And then, and action, boom, out they go. You think they come from the subway? They came from the other one.
Yes. Brilliant.
And also here, these victims are, they come out and they're put on the pavement instead of being taken into ambulances and taken to hospitals. Instead
right.
of lying there. And after a while, they put like these plastic, I don't know what you call them, these
seats.
What is it called? Seats?
Sheets or stretchers?
These things that the police have around a crime scene. These
tape, you mean? The crime scene tape?
Yeah, they put that along the pavement so that the people wounded were lying in a long line on the pavement instead of being taken away with ambulance.
Yeah. Very
and
especially 300 people wounded. At this event, which is a large number, you know. I mean, either those people are taken in hospitals or they're not.
But also one thing that I found really interesting is that if you see this guy, there are two guys in one of these yellow fluorescent vests on it. On the back of it, it says Thon, THON, and that is a Norwegian company. You will see that within the crime scene area is the Hotel Thon, in Brussels, that is when the street is shut off, the hotel is inside this area. And Olof Thon is a billionaire from Norway, and he had buildings very close to where the government building was blown up in Oslo. And there was a lot of things around him with insurance things and questions around what was going on around. And here we have him or his company appearing again, because these people in these yellow vests, they are doing the real deal with these victims more than people that are supposed to do it for real. You know, the ambulance and fire brigade, they are sort of in the background, and these guys with the yellow vests coming from the hotel, the Thon Hotel, is the ones dealing with the extra. So I think there's a possible connection here, once another connection with the Norwegian drama.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. What do we have here, Ole?
Okay, this is, as far as I've been able to find out, these photos were taken when the airport was being evacuated, when people were being taken away. And if you look there, what looks to me is like new tiles for the ceiling.
Yeah, it does. That's it. That's a stack of tiles.
Already.
Like they are ready to replace them and very efficiently.
Very efficiently. Here's another one. You know, these people are being transported out of the airport, just passing by this big. I mean, is this normal to have a big pack of.
No, of course not. No.
In an airport? I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So. Possibly, I would suggest, okay, we blow this thing up and then we have the whole thing on standby because
we got to replace the tiles to clean things up to get back to business.
There you go.
I mean, they probably needed replacing anyway, and this was a
Ole, I know this is one of your favorite photographs. You want to talk about it?
It's. I can only say that when they do these things, they have very odd things going on as well. Because when you look at the November the 13th footage, there were so many strange things, almost like ritualistic sacrifice and so on, in the way the photos were taken, very professionally and so on. And here is one photo that really sort of stands out. The guy to the left, if you look at his hand, he's got a U.S. Air Force ring on. So this is in Brussels, maybe it's possible, but I just think that that is a little bit odd. And then when you look at the image.
This is in Brussels, is it?
Yeah, it's they're taking care of one of the victims. But I just think the whole photo looks a lot like they're almost baptizing him.
Yeah.
And I had a person who I believe is in has been involved in Swedish military intelligence, and he commented on this saying that maybe this is almost like baptizing him. And you're one of us now, some from
the rite of initiation.
And this initiation, exactly. But it's a very odd, photo, I think. And I just compared it with another one. If you can please take the next slide first. Okay. When you look at one of the official images where all these the tiles from the ceiling are falling down, it's almost like on the floor, it's like a chessboard, black and white chessboard that has been blown up. It is the black and white chessboard is also very important in Freemasonic rituals and so on. And in the middle of this is a man dressed. Or a hooded man dressed all in black with, you can never see his face. It's very white and then his hand. And he's just standing there in the middle. When you look at these photos, it is the only photo, the only colors really are these two cubes, red and blue, which are the same colors that is also used at the news stations. If you want to go emotional, they use red. If you want to be serious, they use blue. And maybe I'm taking this too far, but I just want to suggest a possible part of a psyop. You know this old, very famous Ingmar Bergman film, The Seventh Seal?
Yeah.
Where the guy
Seventh is, Seal, yes.
Seventh Seal, maybe in English, sorry. Where the guy is approached by death and they're playing chess about his life. I don't know. Yes. I'm just putting it forward. Then if you go back to the slide before, please. In the debris, the only thing with colors are these colors, which I would suggest that could affect your subconscious into seeing the Palestinian flag.
Yeah. Well, so associating the Palestinian flag with horrific events and death and destruction.
They always want to blame it on the Palestinians when it's a Mossad op. So,
I think that's very telling. It was like between the destruction of the two towers on 9/11, they played this footage of Palestinians rejoicing that was archival. It wasn't contemporary. It was from an earlier religious political event. They just happened to have it at hand. And they even announced that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had taken responsibility, which was a manifest absurdity, but they broadcast it to millions of gullible Americans heard it and were impressed.
It is, there are weird things going on in these operations, that is for sure.
Here's another image from the Seventh Seal.
And also, that white face is exactly the same white mask as in the video that I told you about before, when the guy runs into the Bataclan and he comes up on stage, he picks up a white mask that looks identical to that one.
Wow.
Spooky.
Wow. What can I say? It's just like that is the image.
Well, look, let's move on to this the famous one, the two girls, two women sitting on the seat.
Yeah.
I want to come to that one,
please.
I'm not sure we've got it, Nick. I mean, this is what we have. We're actually to the end of the slide set. I can go back.
No, we haven't seen it yet.
Well, I did send the most famous iconic one that's gone around the world of the woman talking to the mobile phone with the red fingers. Oh, well, that's got missed out.
I can't believe I may have somehow missed it.
Oh, shucks.
I could see if I could find it.
And there's another woman next to her that looks very traumatized, who is a air hostess.
No, we have. It's not in the slideshow.
It's not in the set. Yeah. My apologies, Nick.
Oh, right. Okay, that's it, even though I expect viewers will know what I'm talking about.
Go right ahead.
Okay, well, this is done by that famous, the photographer who took all the pictures, Miss Carzala. We see these two women sitting on a seat. One looks totally relaxed, and she's talking to her mobile phone, and mysteriously, her fingers are all red with which she's holding the mobile phone. And I'm suggesting...
With fake blood, in other words?
Well, yeah, but also you can see a bag right in the bottom of the corner, left-hand corner of the picture, which has got this same red pigment in it. And she might, it looks as if she just dipped her fingers into that bag to get the red color on her fingers.
How bad is that, Nick?
Well, because the blood is mainly on her fingers. It doesn't sort of dribble down a lot. It's not dripping onto the floor or anything. We can't see anything that is cut. There's just a little bit on her sleeve. So she has got picked up a bit of blood in her hand. That's what it looks like. And she's totally relaxed. And I make the comparison with similar figures in the Paris Bataclan attacks, or covered in gold foil that we've maybe been looking at earlier. Guy talking to a mobile phone, looking totally relaxed and nonchalant.
Nick, if you can send me the slide again, I'll see if I can't chance won't add it here at the end, so we can look at it while you're talking about it.
I also think it's interesting, since the mobile phone system was down, how come we see all these people with cell phones speaking in them?
Say that again, Oli.
Since, according to the authorities, the mobile phone system was down.
Was out.
Yeah. So how come they're using them? You know,
that's a good point, yeah.
That is also an indication that these could be crisis actors.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Also, the woman that sit next to her, the damages to her clothes is very strange. She's sitting. It's like you can see her whole stomach. It's like this: the cloth has been torn away, but there's no. She hasn't been hurt.
Yeah, you don't see any wounds. That's the. That's the important thing.
And I've got also a Swedish guy that suddenly appeared that said that he had been there, and he's taking photo of himself, you know, like he was hurt and so on. And he's taking photos of his jeans, but you can only see like this. It looks like somebody has spilled ketchup on them. And then right in front of them with big, big letters is a case with orange strong letters, Helly Hansen. Which, I don't know, possible product placement again, where it's just that is the thing where your eyes get caught.
Oli, Nick, you've both done a brilliant job here. Let me give you a minute or two apiece to sum up your assessment of what happened here in Brussels. Nick, you want to go first?
Yeah, I just sent you those pictures, by the way, in case there's any time to show them. You should receive them. Well, I think what we need people to investigate, are these real people who lived and died? Were there really 35 deaths here? Because everything we've said it doesn't look like that at all. It really doesn't. It looks like it's like there's a template. It's extraordinarily similar, as Ole has brought out, to the previous events, for example, in Paris and in America. There's a template they use, and the stuff is put out very quickly, long before any real police investigation could have found out the answer or found out these things. It's pre-prepared, it's put out very quickly, and we're given the maximum of shock horror. That's why they always happen sort of 8 or 9 in the morning. Most of the time they happen in the morning then. My guess would be that nobody's really died in this event. I stand to be corrected, but we need to get the list, and the list of casualties. You need either the date of birth or the place of birth, and then you can check them out on ancestry.com or ancestry.co.uk, and that is a start. That tells you whether they really lived. And then there's the question: if they really lived, did they really die? Are they really dead? Is there a death certificate? I feel this is a bit of hard work, but there are just a lot of these cases where we're given a list of casualties now, starting with the MH17 in Europe, the crash where the bodies look very, very doubtful. I'm wondering, have we got real deaths? We've got the shock horror thing from the Sandy Hook, where you have funerals with funeral caskets which are empty, okay? Tragic-looking funerals which go on TV and the caskets are empty. And that is the deception that has happened. And if it's happened in Sandy Hook, you know, it can happen here. And somebody wants to pull us at our heartstrings with tragedy. And it's always for the same reason, to ratify war. Okay, let's be crystal clear about this. What the whole damn thing is about is to ready the people of Europe for another horrible pointless war, for more horrible pointless war. And that is why it is so desperately important for us to deconstruct these events.
Excellent, excellent. Ole?
I can also say that I can guarantee that the official story is not true. I can guarantee that these people that are accused for it are absolutely innocent if they exist. And I feel that it's bizarre to even sit and discuss if people really died or not, or existed or not. But we are at that point after studying so many different cases that it's total confusion. I'm like, I have no idea. You really need to go down the lane that Nick shows us here. You need to track each and every one of them all the way down back to see, did these people really exist? Or also it could be a combination of real death and crisis actors. But the operation I see was an operation that was totally connected with Charlie Hebdo, the Copenhagen shooting that I was able to publicly predict 1 month before it happened on the hour, and also the location where it was going to happen. Why? Not because I've got a crystal ball or I'm super into it. Just because I know how they work. They're on a very strict timeline, very strict. Same people behind the November the 13th. And we're seeing a very, very strong input from Mossad. The theme behind these are very Israeli, pro-Israeli, anti-Palestinian. That is the theme, with a very satanic undertone to the whole thing. But being backed up with these leaders in these different countries. And it's through the Bilderberg Group, these networks, hidden networks, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. These are the hidden network that are pulling the strings. And then you think the intelligence agencies like the CIA, I'm sure it's going to be there. Mossad, I'm sure, often the MI6 is also there, and Turkish people and so on, in the backgrounds, covering so that they have alternative options at all times. If this doesn't work, then we do this, then we do this. So there's always multiple operations ongoing at the same time.
Well, let me just say for the audience, it's an extraordinary privilege to have world-class experts like Nick Kohlerstrom and Ole Domegaard here. They have essays that are extraordinary in the book, and Nobody Died in Boston Either, Only Tear by Template, where he expounds upon the theory he's advancing here of the pattern you find replicated again and again and again. And Nick, with a brilliant analysis of what happened at Charlie Hebdo, is a parallel or counterpoint to the Boston Marathon fraud. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest for being here and all of you for watching.
Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.